Buddha once compared a good meditator to a good cook. A good cook knows how to fix different kinds of food and serve them to his master, and then notice what the master likes. Whether he goes for the salty food or the sweet food or the bitter food or the bland. And the cook takes note of that so that tomorrow he can fix more of the kind of food that the master likes. I saw something like this happen in Thailand one time. There were two women who fixed a lot of the food for John Fuang when he was staying in Bangkok. And one of them actually took note of what kinds of food John Fuang liked. And the other woman was very jealous. Why did the first woman seem to know what he liked? And was it John Fuang giving her some secret signals? Or was he telling her when the second woman wasn't around? It wasn't the case at all. The first woman just watched carefully. The second woman wasn't watching. It's the same when you meditate. If you watch carefully what works in your mind and what doesn't work in your mind, then you can make adjustments. You can make it saltier or sweeter or more bitter or more bland. What this means is the function of mindfulness is not simply to keep the teachings you've heard in mind or the things you've read in mind, but you're also trying to keep in mind the experience of meditating, and particularly noticing what you did and what results you get out of it. And as the Buddha said, when you do that, you get your reward, sense of well-being, greater mindfulness, greater alertness, which are the rewards of concentration. If you don't, then you don't get the rewards, just like a cook who's not observing what the master likes. And the master isn't really happy with the food. So think about this as you meditate, that there are lots of different ways you can approach the breath, lots of different ways you can focus the mind. The purpose of the teachings is to give you a sense of the range, or at least a beginning sense of the various ranges you have, various options you have, but you've got to apply them and then notice what's working today and is it going to work tomorrow. You learn how to read your mind, to notice when it's showing the signs that it needs some firmness, it's showing signs when it needs some tenderness. It's not all about being tender and open, but it's certainly not all about being stern and harsh. You've got to give the mind the training it needs. And you have to learn how to read the signs of what's working and what's not working so you can make adjustments. Because there are lots of things to adjust here. The way you focus on things, we're not always just being passive and observant. At the same time, we're not always meddling with things. There are times when you watch and times when you experiment, and then you watch again. And it's this way you develop the right touch. So the mind will respond. I knew in time there was one in John who personally didn't like. But I found that his Dharma talks were really effective. They tended to have a fairly harsh tone. They would start out very slow and mild and then develop into a stronger rhythm and stronger message. And I found them really bracing. So it was a strange thing. I didn't like him personally, but I liked his Dharma talks. I found them effective. Not that I liked the idea of a bracing Dharma talk, but it worked. So I learned to adjust my tastes as to what I liked and didn't like, instead of having a preconceived notion about what was going to work or how I wanted to be treated. I found, well, what works, what has a good effect on the mind. And of course, there were other jhans who were very harsh all the time, and I found myself just closing off to them. So you have to learn that things are not all generalities. We're here to develop a skill, and a skill requires that you read the situation, and then you apply what's appropriate, what works, what gets the kind of results you need. So keep these points in mind, that you're here not only to remember the teachings and then force them on the mind. You're trying to gain a range of skills, and then you apply them to mind and see what works and what doesn't work. What kind of breathing works when there's a blockage in the body? How do you work with it? In some cases, you can immediately breathe through it and it's gone. In other cases, it resists, which is usually a sign that there's some psychological issue in addition to the physical issue. So you have to step back a bit and invite it to open up. And it may not respond. It may take a long while before it decides that it trusts you. And you have to learn to be okay with that. So we can't take a doctrinaire approach as to what's right and what's wrong in the meditation. But we do have to be observant and have standards as what counts as good results and what counts as results that are going to pull you off the path. This throws a lot of responsibility on you as a meditator, but that's important. Some people want to be told, just do this, 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 and you don't have to think, and it's just a sort of mechanical method that you can push the mind through the meat grinder. Then you'll have guaranteed enlightenment at the end. Well, no, you don't. You just have ground beef. The only way you can develop discernment is by being sensitive. And sensitive here doesn't mean that you have sensitive feelings that are easily hurt, but it means that you are sensitive to what's actually going on, sensitive to what you're doing, and sensitive to how it connects with the results. This is why we have to develop concentration. It's that steadiness of our gaze that allows us to see the connection between what we did and the results when they come out. Sometimes they're immediate, sometimes they're not. But it's only when you learn how to develop that sensitivity to cause and effect that you're going to have actual discernment that's going to lead to release. And the instructions on mindfulness, the Buddha says that you try to watch the process of origination and passing away. Now, notice this. He says origination. He doesn't say just arising and passing away. Origination has a different meaning in Pali. It means seeing causes. When something arises, why is it arising? What's arising along with it? And the only way you can check for what's actually a connected cause and what's simply a coincidence is by changing the causes. This is how scientists test physical laws. You change this, does the result change? If you change that, does the result change? If you change what seems to be a cause, but there's no change in the result, that shows that it's probably not one of the causal factors. So you move on and search for something else. But it's only when you make changes like this, make adjustments like this, that you can actually see this process of origination. In other words, you have to see for yourself. We like the idea of see for yourself. Take your own standards. Well, the Buddha does give you standards. He says, listen to the wise, because the wise have a lot to tell you. But there comes a point where you learn from them, and then you have to apply it on your own. And this is where there's a lot of responsibility. You can't keep throwing things back on the teacher. I had a student one time whose attitude was, if the teacher doesn't already know what's going to work for me, then he's not really a teacher. So I went away. And he found that wherever he went, all the teachers were teaching the same thing. Try this and see what works. If it doesn't work, try to figure out something else that does. It's like, again, it's like being a good cook. You can follow the cookbooks, but there will come times when you don't have all the ingredients given in a given recipe. Okay, what do you do to substitute? Or it turns out your ingredients are not quite the same as the ones in the cookbook. Well, how do you adjust the proportions? Maybe the person who wrote the cookbook really liked salty food or really hated salty food. Your taste buds are different. You've got to learn how to make adjustments and use your ingenuity. This way you can take responsibility in your position where you can take responsibility for your meditation. This is not just doing what you like, but it's doing what you think will work, but then you look at it. Does it really work? And you try to develop good standards for judging what works and what doesn't work. Again, this is where you want to listen to the wise. Because they can have some good advice for you. I don't know how many times I've heard people say, well, this particular technique works for me. Well, what does it mean to work? Makes them feel a little bit better. Well, feeling better, a little bit better, is not what the meditation is all about. It's supposed to go deep, make radical changes inside. And there are times when the meditation is going to involve doing things you don't like, but they're going to give good results, pushing yourself harder than you may want to, demanding more of yourself than you may want to give. There's that phrase, the great way is not difficult for those with no preferences. And here they're not talking about having no preferences in terms of results. The preference is to put an end to suffering. That's a very clear preference, and that has to drive everything we do. When they're talking about having no preferences, it means if you find that something works, whether you like it or not, you do it. If something doesn't work, then whether you like it or not, you don't do it. You can't let your preferences for those actions get in the way. And you have to learn how to talk yourself into doing the things that are difficult to do and talk yourself out of doing things that are easy to do but are going to give bad results. That's a real sign of wisdom. That's a real sign of discernment. So learn to be a discerning cook, because you're the one who's going to have to eat the food.